What, it's too weird.
That was one of the first things I changed.
Okay. It's too hard time.
It is.
All right, good morning, everybody. I'm on order of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, June 5th, 2018, primary election day. Anybody who has not voted, please get out and vote today. These things matter. With that, I would ask if everybody to please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Board, if it's okay with you guys, I would ask that we take HERDA, which is listed under additional items, and move them up to just ahead of consideration of minutes, so that we can get Julia and Brooke back on their way. Anybody have an objection to that?
No, I do not.
All right, so we'll plan on that. Now is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda or really anything you'd like to comment on. If you have any comments, come right on up. Brenda.
Good morning, Brenda Dreyer.
Good morning, County Supervisors. Just want to take a few minutes of your time today to do a formal introduction of our newest Ames Economic Development Commission staff person, Dustin Ingram, and I will let Dustin give you a few minutes, a little bit about himself, and I'm very excited about the skill set he's bringing to our organization and ultimately what that can mean for Story County. So, Dustin?
Sure.
You actually can go right here.
Just getting acclimated, I guess, right? So, yeah, my name is Dustin Ingram. I actually moved to Iowa from Georgia back in 2015 to attend the Master's in Community and Regional Planning graduate program at Iowa State University. And the reason I moved to Iowa is actually to study rural communities specifically. I'm from a small town called Elberton, Georgia, the granite capital of the world. And they have a lot of vacant storefronts and, you know, population decline, drops in median income and so forth. So that really motivated me to have an interest in rural communities. In terms of professional experience, what I'm bringing to Ames now, my recent position was in Ackley, Iowa, in Hardin County, just in the northeast corner there. A little bit of it actually goes into Franklin County. But I was the Economic Development Director for the Ackley Development Commission. And that's a nonprofit 501c3 organization funded by the county and by the city of Ackley. And we, you know, being a very small staff, I was the only person for the staff. It was a city clerk, a deputy city clerk. And that was pretty much it for the community. So we were engaged in pretty much everything you could imagine at the city level, everything from designing a website to industrial recruitment. So we also did a lot of county work. So I'm familiar with, you know, reaching out to smaller communities of, 500 people or less even to engage those leaders to affect change in their places. So I'm happy to be here. I'm really grateful that the chamber reached out and had some interest in me. So for this position and
Title is going to be?
Yeah. Director of Business Development at the Ames Economic Development Commission.
So part of the reason that we were able to bring Dustin into our organization is with the addition of Nevada into serving that community with economic development and an executive director. John, in his role there, has really opened up the opportunity that we needed a liaison with the city of Ames. So that's going to be a big part of Dustin's responsibility, but also I'm very excited because he has such a strong background in rural community. I'm hoping he can enhance the services that we're already providing to the communities under 10,000. So we'll have a chance to meet with you all individually, but I wanted to do a formal introduction.
Well, Dustin, we're excited you're here. So one of the great things about where we finally are here in Story County is we have one organization that any economic development activity that occurs anywhere within our county boundaries now, there is some kind of formal role for the AEDC to play. And Dustin, you're joining a great organization, and we're really, really happy to have you on board. We've got a sister who lives in LaGrange, Georgia.
Okay.
So you pick right coming to Iowa. And we're really, really glad you're here.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Nope. Thank you. Great to see you.
On board.
Yep.
All right. Anybody else wishing to come up for public comment? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to a consideration of proclamation announcing June 2018 as Watershed Awareness Month. Mike.
Good morning, Mike Dox.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
How about a few words from you, and then I'll read in the proclamation, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Hey, that sounds perfect. Thanks for the opportunity here. You know, water quality is synonymous with, I think, Story County and water quality improvements and the recognition of need for a good water quality. I think, you know, we call it out in our vision. We call it out in the board's strategic plan. We call it out in the comprehensive plan. We call it out in the Conservation Board strategic plan. And so on. And we've over the years put some resources, some energy toward it, and I think we're making some incredible strides in that direction. We're blessed to have in this community an organization that helps us in that, and that is Prairie Rivers of Iowa. And I know that some of their staff is Penning, and the staff are here today, and. They are our partners in this recent project that we're doing in awareness, if you will, watershed awareness, water quality awareness. And kind of starts with here the board approved some funds to do a signage project, and that is to put on our secondary roads watershed boundary signs. So at the entrance of every watershed of a certain size in the county, there'll be a sign there that says you are now entering Squaw Creek watershed, you are now entering East Indian Creek watershed. There'll be signs at some bridges that say crossing West Indian Creek, crossing Ballard Creek, crossing Walnut Creek, etc. And all of that, I guess, is in an effort to increase awareness about our water resources. That everyone's actions are reflected in our water resources, and so that's important. And so, Prairie Rivers has been doing a fabulous job with that signage project, as well as managing some of our watershed authorities. It was a no-brainer for us to reach out to Prairie Rivers when we started talking about this awareness project and signage project. And so, hence we did, and so they coordinated what we're doing. Now, tomorrow, we have an unveiling of those watershed signs, and that's at Gilbert City Hall at 2 o'clock is where we'll start. And then from there we'll spend a little bit of time inside, and then hear from Prairie Rivers and believe there's a few others, and I know Rick that I think you're on the docket. And then we'll go outside and have an unveiling of some of those signs. So, having said that, I don't know if Penny or Dan or Kayla or anyone wants to say any words about our proclamation.
Just that, you know, I think that this...
Come on, so we pick you up, Dan, and introduce yourself so that we have it for all posterity.
Dan Howe with Prairie Rivers of Iowa. And I guess just that this is a good time to do watershed awareness, since we're putting up these signs, and we have that going on since June is a month where there's usually a lot of rain and a lot of potential for things to wash into the water that we don't want. So then this is a good kind of opportunity to you know, say let's make it a month long thing. Let's have a lot of efforts going on to raise people's awareness of all the wonderful water resources that we have in Story County, and the efforts that are going on to improve water quality, reduce flooding, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Dan. So a couple things to know. One, all of us are in watersheds all the time. We all live in watersheds. Everywhere we go, we're in a watershed. And if you think about where these signs are going to go, which is basically, and maybe I'm getting overly specific here, but it's basically going to be on paved county roads is where these signs are going to go, anywhere you cross a watershed boundary. And that's going to be at the high points, right? If you think about where the watershed lines are, it's basically on the high points. And so we're going to have some things of note in places that people don't typically think about seeing something having to do with watershed. The other thing I would say is, really spearheaded by the Story County Conservation Board, there is no county in Iowa that's taking a more proactive approach on its watersheds. Here in the next couple weeks, we'll receive a report that the three of us commissioned that assesses 100% of the watersheds, or almost 100% of the watersheds in Story County. No other county has taken it to that level yet. And then our partnership with Prairie Rivers just allows us the hope that we're actually going to do something with that information. And so, Mike, so appreciative of everything you do. Penny, your whole crew, so appreciative of everything you do. It's the right thing for us to be doing.
Very good. Thank you.
Absolutely great.
All right, so Watershed Awareness Month proclamation, June 2018, in honor of Iowa's efforts to become a healthier state. Whereas the county's rivers and lakes provide recreational opportunities and wildlife habitats that enhance the quality of life of Story County residents. And whereas protecting and restoring the quality of groundwater and surface water is a goal of the Story County Comprehensive Plan, and whereas water quality and flooding issues in rivers and lakes cannot be mitigated without good stewardship of the private and public lands in the watersheds that drain to those rivers and lakes, and whereas Story County has demonstrated its commitment to watershed awareness and water quality through many efforts, including the comprehensive assessment of its watersheds and through the signing of creek crossings and watershed boundaries throughout the county. Whereas the month of June is typically a time of heavy rainfall when nutrient losses and flooding are especially severe and when conservation practices have the greatest benefit, now therefore be it resolved that we, the Story County Board of Supervisors and the Story County Conservation Board, do hereby announce and proclaim to all citizens that June 2018 is Watershed Awareness Month in Story County, Iowa. All citizens are encouraged to enjoy the outdoors and improve their physical, social, and emotional health while considering the health of the watersheds on which they live. Anything to add? If not, I take a motion to adopt.
I would move that we adopt this resolution, proclamation. Sorry, proclamation.
I'll second that.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Mike, anything further?
No, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It is Watershed Awareness Month. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Next is bid opening for the animal shelter remodeling located at 975 West Lincoln Way. Jeff, you need to have as good a day today as you had last week.
Yeah.
We had a good bid opening last week for a different building. Actually, we're going to do that bid award here before long, aren't we?
Yeah, coming up later. So, yes, we've got four bids that we received this morning.
Excellent.
So.
That was a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle opened for me. Thanks. Saved me that effort. So the first is from Bergstrom Construction.
Where are they from, Jeff?
Bergstrom is from Des Moines.
Thank you.
So first we have their bid bond, the amount of 5% of their bid total. We have their acknowledgement of addendum number 1 has been received. We have a base bid amount, $519,900. They list the 24 calendar weeks to complete the project. And then we have alternates. Alternate number 1 is replacing the 2 older furnaces and condensing units in the building. That's an add of $14,000. We have an alternate number 2, which is the sound attenuation panels in the dog kennel areas, which is an add of $17,000. And then we have alternate 3, which is for the county facility staff to complete some of the interior work. We have a deduct of $22,000.
Okay.
Okay, the next is from Docs Construction out of DeSoto, Iowa.
That's D-O-C.
D-O-C-S, Docs, yes. We have a bid bond for 5% of the bid total. Let's see, we have their acknowledgement of addendum number one. We have a base bid amount, $413,045. So $413,045. They list a completion time of 16 weeks. And their alternate number one is an add of $12,025. Alternate number two is an add of $9,574.12.
Hold on.
$9,574.12. And alternate number three is a deduct of $34,901. Next, we have HPC Construction from Ames. So they have a bid bond of 5% of the bid amount. We have acknowledgement of addendum number one. They have a base bid amount of $380,000, even $380,000. They have 14 weeks for completion. They have alternate number one of add of $13,500. Alternate number two is an add of $9,000. And alternate three is a deduct of $10,000. And the last is from Two Rivers Group out of Altoona. They have their bid bond for 5% of the amount. They have an acknowledgement of addendum number one. They have a base bid amount, $498,500. $498,500. They have a completion time frame of 24 weeks. And alternate number one is an add of $14,600. Alternate two is an add of $18,500. And alternate three is a deduct of $10,300. That's everything.
Outstanding.
Yeah, a little bit of a spread there.
But a heck of a range.
Yeah.
All right, so you guys will talk about it. You'll bring back a recommendation next week.
Yes, that's correct. We've got a call scheduled for tomorrow amongst ourselves, so we'll get fitters and,
perfect
conversation and be back to you.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll see you in a little bit.
Yeah.
Next is agency reports. Our friend Lisa Heddens from Nanio, Iowa. Central Iowa.
Good morning, Lisa.
Hi.
We were talking before the meeting. This is a big week for you, Lisa.
It is. And I already voted, so that part doesn't matter.
All right, good. I'm shocked that you voted.
So first, I do want to thank you again for allowing me to adjust my time to come before you during the legislative session. It's a little hard, and I prefer to come before you versus having one of my staffs. It's a little bit easier for me to answer any questions that you may have. So I previously sent to you just an overview that had our mission statement and some of the information as to what we've been doing over the past year. So I just want to highlight some of that because I do have some updated numbers. So one of the things we do is monthly we do our public education, and we've had a variety of topics. We do volunteer appreciation, art and meditation. Something new that we've done this year are lunch and learns. We've been reaching out to different agencies and actually bringing them into ours and then talking about who we are. From when I came on, there were still a number of people who really didn't understand what non-essential Iowa, who they were and what we did. So we've been bringing them in small groups and doing it that way. That's been a very positive avenue of outreach. We've done some movies. In November, we did a presentation on PTSD. We had Brett McLean from the Veterans Affairs come in and speak on that. And then we brought in a couple folks from the Puppy Jake Foundation. And then we just had the recent presentation last month on crisis mobilization, the new service within our region. And actually, we're doing a lunch and learn on that for some folks that weren't able to attend the evening presentation. So we thought it was just another way to reach out to some additional people. We've had 116 unduplicated individuals attend those monthly presentations. 100 of those were from Story County. So it shows that that's been a positive outreach. Another area that we do is we do education classes. Our family-to-family class is a 12-week class for family members or loved ones of an individual with a mental illness. We have one 12-week class. We had 20 participants who started the class and 20 of them that ended the class. Then on top of that, we have two facilitators. We did two peer-to-peer classes. A peer-to-peer class is just what it says. It's four peers. It's 10 weeks long. We did one in Marshalltown, and we did one in Boone. And we've been targeting the wellness centers to work with individuals there. So we had six individuals at each of those centers start and complete those classes, and we hope to go around to all the wellness centers and then do that and have that done. It has recently been done in Ames, or actually just prior to me, so we will circle back and do another one in Ames for the broader community. And then we are also starting a basics class actually tomorrow. And basics is a six-week class for family members who have a child or teenager either recently diagnosed or hasn't been diagnosed yet, but they know that there is some mental health conditions going on. And so it is a six-week kind of overview class, and that one's starting on Wednesday. We've been doing several community outreach to churches, civic groups, ISU classes, other centers. And we continue to do our newsletter, both hard copy and electronic copy. And we are trying to modernize that a little bit. And I have a staff member who's got a little bit more experience on that. So hopefully we'll have something new and fresh within the next few months. NAMI on Campus is the new program that we have at Iowa State. They have been just doing tremendous outreach to university students through, they do monthly meetings. They actually have their own board, and their board president serves then on our board of directors. They have been going into sororities and fraternities and other clubs speaking to, other classes talking about mental health. And then something new that they had talked with some of the other NAMI on campuses within the nation, and I'll say their advisor is Michael Newton, chief of police at Iowa State. He is the former president of NAMI Wisconsin and is also on the NAMI Iowa board, so a very good connection for the student group there. But they did a bandana project where they handed out over 500 green bandanas for mental health awareness and to sound out stigma. And then they also handed out, and I brought the card, but I kind of folded a copy over, that has like emergency numbers on here, and then what to do. Who do you contact, or what do you say to somebody who's having a mental health crisis? And when you got a bandana, you're also someone who's willing to hand out some of these cards on campus. So that's been a huge outreach that they've been doing, and I'm actually taking the president along to the NAMI National Conference, so I think that will be a good avenue for her to network and learn more as to what other areas are doing to outreach to students. For support, we do continue to have our connection support group that meets weekly. We've had 46 unduplicated individuals who've been attending that, and they attend pretty regularly. We have a family support group that meets once a month. That one, we have 17 unduplicated individuals that have attended that from Story County. And when I do my asset report this year, you're going to notice under family consumer support that the numbers are going to be pretty drastically different from last year to this year. And if you recall, when I first came on as director, from the previous director, I couldn't figure out how they calculated their numbers for asset reports. And I knew it would take a year or two to get that figured out. Last year when we submitted our asset numbers, this was a particular area, family consumer support, I still could not figure out how they counted their numbers. After working with my board president and treasurer, it looks like they used duplicated numbers in the past. And so it's going to look like a dramatic change in there, because it looks like they used duplicated and continued it each month versus just saying, no, it's unduplicated for a year. So I just want to make you aware of that. We also have two state trainers for family support to be trained statewide for individuals who want to be family support trainers. And we have one staff who is a state trainer for our connection support group. So we're kind of expanding just even beyond what we are doing here. And then it also helps get two support groups going, one up in Hardin County and one in Jasper County that are actively going, and they have all gone through specific training. So they are non-specific family support groups. This year we provided 33 loans with our emergency loan funds, and that is partial is funded through asset and partial is some money that we have and that we set aside to do those loans. That's probably about a 50 or 60% jump from what we did last year. The need is great, and I will say we're getting a lot. We're working a lot with Stacey Sugar and Jim Davis with their jail diversion program. So that has been a positive working relationship. Our wellness center, we're open Monday through Fridays from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. We have served 98 unduplicated. 85 of those are specific to Story County. And then we're almost doubling that number of visits per month and stuff. So it certainly is a need that folks are wanting to attend our group. And then just as additional information, we partnered with the Ames Police Department, ISD Police Department, Story County Attorney's Office, and then the region, CICS, and did a week-long crisis intervention team training. We trained 24 law enforcement officers in that de-escalation technique. We plan to offer it again. We actually were doing outreach to officers within our region to find out when's a good time to do it. We'd like to do it at least twice a year. So we're hoping to do it again in the fall. We're helping to organize the Mental Health Expo that takes place in September. This year, Joan Becker will be the featured speaker at it, both at our lunch and learn and then at our evening presentation at Iowa State. And then I continually try to stay in contact with my local officials, my region, and then stay on top of all the billing and reports that are required as well. And then lastly, you would have seen is our brochure, and we kind of updated our brochure with a little bit more detailed information and a new program that we are going to be starting that is not on here yet, so we'll have to do some adjustments on here. It's called Ending the Silence. And that's actually a 50-minute presentation, video presentation, and then it's a peer in the classroom setting. So it's making more awareness to students within the classroom settings. So we're working with counselors throughout Story County and the region on this. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lisa. Questions for Lisa?
I have no questions, but I want to say thank you for your effort and those that came before. With NAMI in this community. 25 years ago when I worked for part-time for Mainstream, I worked in one of the houses, group homes for adults with mental illness. I also worked at Broadlawns in a closed group home. And families struggled so much to learn how they could connect with other families and what types of information was really available. Who could you call when your family member was having a tough time? So thank you for all of that.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, we're certainly seeing where we could use an additional staff person, at least a half-time staff person, if not a full-time one, so that I can get out in the region. But two, we do get people that just stop in. I had someone yesterday who just wanted to stop in, talk about their situation, you know, and find some resources. And that's my job. That's what I'm there to do. But then I also need someone to help stay on top of all the other stuff while I do that.
Absolutely. Board rep on the mental health region, you hear your organization spoken of in glowing terms. You make reference to the fact that you're in other counties providing support, instituting groups that they don't have the means or the ability to do. Good on you. They say good things about you and continue on that behalf. That said, I think the legislative session will come to an end here pretty soon if it already hasn't. And my questions are, Joe.
Look
what came out of this year's legislative session on a mental health basis that you would high point and talk to us about?
Well, I think two things. One would be, still with my other hat on, but even with my non hat on, would be the complex needs bill that passed through. I think it was Senate File 2115. I might have that mixed up, but whatever. That would probably be a significant piece of legislation that was passed bipartisanly through both the House and Senate. I think that just really is a testament to show that we're not totally dysfunctional, that we can work together on very important issues. And I do think the one thing that we will have to be very cognizant of is the majority of that, those services are supposed to be paid by Medicaid, is to make sure that is occurring. Because I can tell you, I still hear from, with my other hat on, from family members that are having problems with reduction, denial, or termination of services, and agencies not getting paid. So we just want to make sure that is still occurring and it doesn't totally fall on the counties to pick up the dollars where it's supposed to be coming through the state. So that is one area, policy-wise, which I think is a good thing. The other thing is I think the suicide prevention legislation that does have board members and administrators at school districts that are to have at least 1 hour of suicide prevention training from an accredited curriculum and really focusing on adverse childhood effects or ACEs. So I think that is another good thing so that we have a better awareness. It helps with how to talk with people and how to direct them, where they need to go for resources. And I think lastly, the other piece of legislation would be our focus on opioids. And while it hasn't hugely hit Iowa yet, it certainly is, hitting more of the east and west side. They'll soon be here even more so. And I do think we're at least are starting to be on top of that more. And I also serve on the local Story County work group in regards to that as well.
Thank you.
Good.
Outstanding. Lisa, thanks.
Cool. Thank you.
I don't see Jane Underhill there, so no Story Time Child Care Center report. So now we're going to skip to additional items, item number 2 under additional items, discussion consideration of HRTA's request to adjust unit service rates retroactive to December 1st, 2017, and through the remainder of this fiscal year. Julia Brooke, long time no see.
Oh. We like to see you every week.
Well, good morning, Board. This request before you comes from HRTA as they've taken a look at what their allocation from Story County for fiscal year 18 looks like. The information that's been provided to you does reflect bills to the county for February, March, and April of 2018. Those bills have not yet been processed. They're still in review, but we've received them, and we'll be getting those processed as soon as we can. I think you'll hear the continued story of how Medicaid has changed things for all types of providers, transportation included. And so I'll let Brooke and Julia talk about the information they submitted in terms of changing that unit of service rate and making that retroactive to January or December of 2017 and then through next fiscal year, keeping in mind that we have a contract in place this current fiscal year and their contract for fiscal year 19 has already been signed. So we would need to adjust those rates if you do agree to approve the higher rate. So with that, I will turn it over to Brooke and Julia.
Okay. So what I provided in the packet was showing that our current rate of $18.64 is what we get per trip, but what we have figured our actual rate is due to the decrease in ridership based on some changes that were made at the Medicaid level. Our current cost per trip is now $32.09. So that's a huge difference, and what we have to then do if we don't adjust our rate is that we would then have to use our STA and FTA funding to supplement that cost. And as you can also tell, we've already taken a $285,000 deficit just in Story County
from the trips. Now, that's not all asset trips. That's all trips that we've provided in Story County in general. But we have taken a deficit where last year we had an actual surplus in Story County for the number of rides that we've taken, which is why we're here asking for that to be adjusted. We have done a lot of things to try to counteract what is happening with Medicaid, and we are trying to review our current model, which I kind of talked about last week as well, on different things that we can do so that there's some additional money flowing into HRDA. But for the asset-funded trips, this is where we're at with that. And so that's why we're here asking for the additional money, because the trips are down and the cost is up, that money still be used in our asset program so we still get that.
Right. So it's money that has been allocated or put in by asset, but you can't access it at the current per-trip charge.
Right.
So we're not talking about increasing the dollars that we put into asset or even where they're supposed to be used. We're just talking about paying a little more per trip, since our trips are down, and we think that's because of the federal regulations coming down.
Can you elaborate a little bit on just starting with how the Medicaid portion or Medicaid ruling has impacted that?
Yeah, I'm going to have Brooke talk about that a little bit.
So there were several changes that are made to Medicaid, and some of them are federal changes and some of them are just state changes. And I think everybody's heard in the paper and on the news about how Iowa went to a managed care system, which is consistent with other states in the country. So we had to contract with three different brokers that work under those managed care organizations and then one of the managed care organizations directly. In November, they announced a couple of major changes that really affected us this fiscal year, so we saw the changes start to happen in December. One was AmeriHealth Caritas, who had the majority of individuals in Iowa, especially those with intellectual disabilities, which comprises a good portion of our ridership base. Those individuals had to be moved to one of the two remaining managed care organizations. That caused a significant delay in getting paperwork processed. Some of them weren't getting the same level of services that they were getting before, including rides to services. Another major change that happened, which was initiated by the state, was to take supported community living individuals, so those who are living in group homes, and they said, well, now we have these tiered rates based on the level of service that their dayhab provider or their housing provider was giving. They said that the transportation was included in that rate, and so Medicaid would no longer pay for transportation for those folks.
Separately.
In Story County, we tried to contract or work with the various providers in our entire region, but specifically to Story County, the main provider here is Mainstream Living. They elected to provide those trips on their own with their own staff, so that did obviously account for a good portion of rides that we are no longer providing, and so therefore our cost per ride has increased significantly just in the past few months.
And it's not just the payment itself, correctly, but the number of riders ties into the amount of state and federal funds to be able to draw down. And I'm asking these questions because I think it's important for people to understand how all of a sudden we show minus $285,000 for Story County when we have been a surplus county for many years. And I'd also like you to address, I've got the budget in front of me from both fiscal year 18 and then what we're proposing for 19, but address some things like the cost of repairs and the cost of fuel and how that ties in for Story County.
So let me just explain a little bit about what Loris was saying about the federal and the state funding. The way that we get
federal transportation funding and we get state transportation funding. And there are formulas for that that goes through the Iowa DOT. That is based, and then they, because of the way the Iowa is established, they have 35 transportation systems in the state of Iowa, and then they use these formulas if they can't, for agencies that can't go to the FTA directly, and then they divvy that money down. So that is based on ridership and the number of miles that we put on the vehicles. So anytime there's a significant change like this, that's going to also affect future state and federal funding. And so, and because HRDA operates as a region and we have 7 counties within our region, we have to operate as a region. So even if we had a surplus in Story County, say our riders were up, if the other counties, they weren't, because we operate as a region, that could affect funding in Story County as well. But this change in the Medicaid funding and how that's going to affect our trips is also going to significantly affect our FTA and FTA funding moving forward. And so we're going to have to find other ways to fund HRDA, which is why I said we need to look at what our model is now, where it's generally been that we use it to serve, you know, those that are absolutely need transportation. And with Medicaid funding, that's what a large portion of our population was. If that's going to go away, even though the need's not going away, but if that's going to be managed in a different level, then we're going to have to look at other ways of doing funding.
As I went through the budget, kind of looked at some of the Story County, what you planned on getting revenue from Story County versus what we were actually getting from Story County. And every one of our funders, according to budget, in Story County, we received less because of Medicaid and some other changes than anticipated. And so as an example here, AmeriHealth itself was down $110,000 loss in that anticipated revenue.
That's all based on number of rides.
So number of rides. And why I'm kind of emphasizing this is Thursday's board meeting was kind of a shock and a solemn one for all of us in recognizing just exactly where we were. And even some of the funding, like Dial-A-Ride is down, is an example of that. And I had an interesting conversation with Sherry Atwood from SciRide. Dial-A-Ride is actually a contracted service for SciRide contracts with HRDA for it. And it's my understanding that SciRide has taken a very liberal view in how it approves the funding for those rides, that they're allowing anyone who calls Dial-A-Ride, SciRide is paying for it, but the actual requirements are much more restrictive. So that feeds into, once again, it was $47,000 we're down in fiscal year 18, right? And that's on SciRide's very liberal interpretation of who they'll pay for to write SciRide. So where I'm headed with this as an example is, can you explain, like, the decision to have the executive committee work with you on budgeting and moving forward about where changes will be made? And
I think you just did, Laura.
Okay, well, okay, all right. I guess, you know,
So I've got two questions. Yeah. One, how's it going in the other 6 counties in our region? So are we seeing similar things? Is it more pronounced in Story County? What are we seeing there?
It is more pronounced in Story County. So what HRDA elected to do, because we understand the compounding effect that these Medicaid rides will make to HRDA as an entire organization, we wanted to work with those providers and ensure that their clients still had transportation to get to their service.
Which has to be our primary goal, 100%.
Correct. And so we reached out to them. In the month of December, we provided free transportation. We charged nothing to anyone for those rides. And we did that so that we could gather some data, because we had, I believe it was around 2 to 3 weeks notice of this change, and so did they. Medicaid is not known for giving great advance notice of changes that they make. Sometimes we get letters saying that it happened a couple weeks ago. So we didn't have a lot of time to react or a lot of data to give them. So we collected the data, met with everyone in January, and attempted rate negotiations. And all of the providers we were able to negotiate with the exception of Mainstream Living here in town. We have reached out to them, I believe, 3 or 4 times now, met in person and had some phone calls with them and asked them to reconsider, but they are happy with, you know, what they're doing at this time and aren't interested in making a change. So that kind of led to where we're at now. So
but that's not, so Mainstream Living clearly accounts for part of the rides that were down. And it's important to note that those individuals are still getting where they need to be,
correct,
which is being provided directly by Mainstream.
Correct.
But there's no way that explains 100% of the ridership that were down. So talk me through that.
So part of the other change at Medicaid, there was a couple of other things that went on. When, with AmeriHealth Caritas that went out of business,
right,
they could call HRDA directly and get their rights. They didn't have to go through a third-party MCO to get, I mean, they didn't have to go through a portal to get their rights or go through AmeriHealth or Access to Care, unless they were any EMT rights. So they could call us directly. When AmeriHealth went away, United Healthcare stepped in, took all of those people. Everybody had to go through United Healthcare. There were people that were lost in the system. They just didn't know what to do or who to call or how to get their rights. And so if they would call us, we were taking them as our general public, then telling them what to do. But because there was this, it took some time for them to get all of that done. Now, United said that they would cover the cost of those if they were under Medicaid for a period of
just the month
like
of December.
30 days, just for the month of December. So then again, we had 30 days to try to get everybody back. So we've lost some people. They've just been lost in
the system. But these are people we should be getting back as they get through the system.
So that was December and January. In February, we signed a contract with United Healthcare that they could start calling us directly again.
Super.
So that just happened. So now we're trying to get everybody calling back again. Again, I think we've got some people that are kind of just lost because there's been too many changes and they don't know what to do. And when people get really frustrated, especially with the transportation, they just quit going.
Right.
And so we are trying to, you know, get
and these are in the folks that Julie is referencing that the AmeriHealth changes affected that aren't those supported community living that I spoke about. These individuals are getting to work. They're going places, not just Mainstream.
Right.
So, you know, to kind
it's
of
not
add
the day
that. It's not exclusively that. You are correct that there are, you know, other services that they were getting that has been changed. We did have to speak a little more to what Laura said. So, yes, our other services like Dial-A-Ride, we contract. So because CyRide has a fixed route, they're federally required to have a complementary similar to paratransit program. And because we're already providing that type of service and our staff's already trained, we contract that for them, and it comes at a lower expense to the city of Ames. So they have experienced over the past, I believe, 3 years now, a decline in ridership. I know that the CyRide staff has been, we've given them documentation on who's riding, who isn't riding, so they've been going through some of that themselves. But in addition, we received a phone call from CyRide about a month ago. They had a gentleman who, through AmeriHealth, had previously been riding with a monthly pass on the fixed route program, and it took 3 months. They had made numerous phone calls. CyRide tried to help. No one could figure out how to get his monthly pass. So we actually had to step in, not even knowing the individual, and try to help connect him to finally get him his monthly pass. So it's not just HRDA that's being affected by these changes. It's all of the transportation systems in Iowa.
And in addition to that, another change that's being made is the integrated setting rules. And so to get people more integrated into the community. So, and that takes effect February of 2019. but agencies have started getting people more integrated. So instead of picking large groups of people from group homes and taking them all to one place, people are now getting jobs out in the community. So now we're having to do more of the one-on-one and picking them up here and taking them to their job and then picking them up here and taking them to their job. And that, again, increases the cost because we're not picking up as many people. And so we're just trying to figure it all out, too. We have somebody on staff that is going through the entire schedules of Story County that we have now to see where we can combine the trips better. But because it has all kind of come and hit all at one time, we're trying to get it figured out, but it's not a quick overnight fix for us. It all takes time.
Sure.
And then we can figure out who now isn't writing anymore. We've been running some reports and kind of reach out to some of them and being like, hey, we missed you. Like, give us a call if, you know, like, why you haven't been writing or do you need help? And we do think some of that is all of the Medicaid that they're just deciding this is too much of a hassle and I would rather not do it. And so, unfortunately, then they're probably not going to as many of the services that could be allotted to them because it's too frustrating of a process.
I think that was before us today about compensating for the delivery of those services. But I wanted to come back a little bit about increased repairs. You don't have to list them all and maintenance, okay, the cost of gasoline going up. But also about moving forward because in Story County, HRDA has added some services like the many trips to Nevada and around Nevada and whatever. So part of this puzzle going forward that would not necessarily be funded by any type of Medicaid or what asset would pay it, okay, would be about continuing to provide those services. And so would you talk a little bit about plans for van pools and some of that?
Go ahead. That's your baby.
So you're correct that I know we've spoken about this before, that in the past few months, or I guess this fiscal year, had added the consistent shuttle between Boone and Ames, and we want to continue to develop that. And, of course, we more recently added the continuous shuttle between Nevada and Ames, and then, as we spoke last week, had to add a second driver to that in the afternoons because of the popularity. And then, of course, the in-town Nevada services while the bus is here. So those have been going great, but again, additional services obviously increase cost. And then one of the things that we're doing is sending out, this month we'll be sending out an RFP on a van pool program that will be more of a turnkey program, which will help target those that need employment, rights to employment. So we're trying to look at some services that aren't really what you think of HRDA's traditional transportation option.
And we know that Story County is, because of your low unemployment rate that you have there, which has always been kind of, I mean, it's a great thing, and then it's got this little bit of a downside. But in talking to some of the people in Story County, the need to bring people into Story County for work. And so a van pool could possibly do that, get people from the Marshalltown area in or, you know, more from the Des Moines area or some of that type of stuff as well. And we know that DART has a van pool program, but because we want to look at this for our entire region and not just Story County, and there are a lot of places in our regions that people need to get to work as well, so it's not just everybody going into, you know, the downtown Des Moines area, we kind of wanted to look at what we can do to get some of those areas in our county's employment too. So we've got some of that, so we're starting talks with, you know, economic development partners and some of that stuff, because we're going to have to look at how we do some of that.
We've got two of them right here for you.
I know. Absolutely. He's got my card. I gave it to him already.
And we have an 8:30 Friday meeting at the Chamber, and Brooke, you're going to be able to make it up to, and we may even get somebody from Sat Right over there too.
Super.
To approach that. So the last thing I'd like you to just say, coming back to by working with the Executive Committee, talk about how the difference between the fiscal year 18 and fiscal year 19 budget.
So I was tasked with having to prepare our fiscal year 19 budget, knowing that we are already over $500,000 down in our budget. And so I ended up having to cut over $900,000 in our budget, which I did. Was not easy, but that is going to have some layoffs that we're going to have to do. It's going to have to be really taking a look at our fleet and do we repair or do we just wait for replacement vehicles, which we all know are few and far between. You know, we get maybe, so we have 92 vehicles in our fleet and we get maybe replacement of 3 to 5 a year. That takes a long time to, you know, do our replacements. But those are things that we're going to have to do and yet still provide the services that we need to do. And that's why we're not here to ask for additional money. We're just here to kind of reallocate the funding that we've already been approved for so that we can continue to provide.
Yeah, we need to be able to access the dollars that are already set.
And as we go forward, just as an example here in fiscal year to date, for the maintenance and vehicle repair for Story County alone, it's $36,000 in the whole. And so as looking about what kind of vehicles can be purchased in the past, what kind of various partners can be put together to get those so we get the older ones off.
Yeah, but when it's taking you 18 years to rotate all the
I know that. I'm just saying. She said it wasn't going to happen overnight.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
It's not going to happen overnight, but we have to make a plan because we do feel that this is what our new norm is going to be. We have no guarantees of what's going to happen with Medicaid. We all have our hopes and dreams of what Medicaid could look like in the future, not what it looks like today, but there's no guarantee of that. So we have to start taking a hard look. And our strategic plan that we did last year specifically says HRDA needs to take a look at not depending all on federal and state dollars. We thought we'd have a little bit of time to develop that. Unfortunately, we got pushed. And so those are things we have to look at. And we have to have some money we have to have some programs that are actually making us some money.
All right, so let's deal with this, which gets us through June 30th of this year. But then we're going to need to come back and deal with what it looks like for FY19 as well. Because, like you say, we're not even short-term to knowing what the solution we're headed toward is.
Right.
But let's deal with this today. Laura, you going to make the motion?
Yeah. I'll take a comment before you do. Sure. Just for the record, because we've talked a lot about rides for the general public and then rides for individuals who are covered under Medicaid, specifically those with and within the disability population. And I just want to make sure it's on record that because of state law, Story County is not, or any county, is not able to directly fund a service for somebody who has a disability. That is up to the region. And that's one of the reasons why when we get the bills from HRDA, we have staff in community services review that, because we get names, to review that to make sure it's a clean bill and that we're not funding individuals with disabilities because of that state law that's still in place.
Well, and that's one of the things you and I fought against. I mean, I still think it was erroneous language that went in there. But,
but it hasn't been changed yet, so it's what we have to live by. So
there's a state representative when you need
him. She just walked out.
We'll be back in contact with him.
She's fighting too, Rick.
No, she's with us, no question.
So the dollars before us, the county funds, go to those rides for individuals other than individuals with disabilities or families with disabilities. So I just want to make that clear. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
I would move that we approve adjusting our fiscal year rate retroactively back to December of 2017 from the contract rate to the new proposed rate.
Second. Motion is second. Further discussion?
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Keene.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Thank
keep
you.
Working.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll see you guys. We'll be back for the 2019 schedule.
Next is consideration of minutes, May 22nd and May 29th.
As presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Keene.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. We got new personnel actions. We got one to add. Nick Herridge. Who actually is going to be working on drainage effective June 11th in secondary roads at $22.24 an hour.
So move as presented.
Second.
Motion is second on personnel actions. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now consent agenda.
As presented.
Second.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. That gets us to no public hearing items today. Additional item number one, discussion consideration of awarding the bid to Two Rivers Group for the remodel of our crisis stabilization unit.
Okay.
So Two Rivers was the low bidder for the crisis stabilization?
Yes, Two Rivers was the low bidder. We did a lot of conversation with them on Wednesday or Thursday last week. Everything, they're fully comfortable with their bids. Gave us kind of a preliminary list of subcontractors, all people we've worked with before. We're confident with all of them. Schedule-wise, they were comfortable with the schedule. So I think, yeah, we're, I guess the main discussion item today is probably that alternate on the generator, whether we proceed with that or not.
Yep. Okay. So I would suggest to the board that there's at least two other buildings. John, I'll look at you since Joey's not here. There's at least two other county-owned buildings that if we were picking out where we were going to put our next generators, now that we got Human Services taken care of, would come ahead of this building for me. We had Mary Greeley tell us that a generator was not a necessary component. So for me, it would seem kind of silly to build that in. So I'm suggesting that we award the bid with the option of not having the generator. Thoughts?
I listened very closely to what Mary really had to say, and if they thought there was a need there, I was comfortable in supporting it. I think they clearly know what they are going to be taking on, and that's it. I would make this a clean bid, too, with no alternate.
I agree.
Okay, so we need a motion to award the bid to Two Rivers without the alternate of adding the generator.
And I would move consideration of the bid to Two Rivers Group in Altoona for the amount of $213,500. Without the backup generator alternate.
I second.
Motion to second. Further discussion. Anything else we need to know, Jeff?
No.
Okay.
They're anxious to get started.
Yeah.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Bid is awarded to Two Rivers Group. We're excited to see them get to work.
Great.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next is discussion and direction. Discussion and direction for audiovisual system replacement. You mean we need new audiovisual? Somebody? That's shocking to me. For the Board of Supervisors public meeting room. Barb.
Good morning, Barb.
Hi, Barb.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology. As you know, at budget time, I brought to you just a budgetary quote on replacing the system in this room. It did not include cameras. It did not include new speakers. So I guess now that we're looking at projects for the next fiscal year, I'd like a little more direction from the board as to what you'd like included in the proposal before I send it out for RFP and bring it to you. Any ideas?
And I think, as Alyssa and Barb and I met last month, was it?
Yes.
Okay,
a couple months ago.
Okay, got it. And we went over the initial quote that Barb had received, okay? And we discussed the various items in there and what they would do and what we would be having to replace just because it's outdated or dying, or and then how the interactive would go. And we ended up around that $42,000 between a digital screen to go with a brand new laptop and type projection system, and then you've got with Shelly some of her when her board would be replaced or something. There was something related to Shelley also, but so that, and then hopefully also that we would get better acoustics, we'd be able to plug a camera right in, but the cameras, she said, were not included. And I said, well, in the future, I know that one supervisor had expressed, is there any way we would be able to do kind of a split screen at some point where people would be able to see people talking at the same, or us up here, and at the same time be able to see what was on the projection board, for example. Was there ever an opportunity for interactive? And these would be add-ons in the future, possibly. However, Barb wants to know if we would be interested in that type for when she goes out to actually get those RFPs, is what she's saying. So it's asking us to think a little bit, what would we like to have in a perfect world? And I, just to continue a second here, I think during the budget discussion it came up, one of the things that Alyssa, Barbara, and I were charged with is, well, if we added that whole other layer, who would run it? Didn't get that far in the discussions, but clearly there would need to be some type, if we're going to go to interactive screens or a camera that would have functions beyond.
Yeah, anything beyond a static shot
right.
is going to require somebody to manipulate what you're doing there.
So, you know, so we've got $42,000 budgeted for next year. Is that right?
Yes.
And we know, we believe that we could do kind of our visual portion for that and new microphones that would pick up things in the audience.
Yes.
Which I think is a bare minimum. I, however, am interested in looking at how do we go to the point that we don't have somebody setting up a tripod and a camera for every meeting, that we just hit a switch and it's got at least the one static shot, and maybe it's a split screen with two static shots where you can see what's going on. I would have real interest in seeing what that is, but I don't know that I'd be willing to commit to anything before I see what it would cost us additionally. And so, Barb, is there a way that we could send out the RFP for a base? Here's what we know we want, but we also like to see options for adding on to it.
Sure, and I think that's the way to go. We've already got basically what is the base. Now, can we add cameras? What would that look like? Can we improve the speaker system? What would that look like? I met with the same vendor again last week, and they did say, asked about these microphones, because there's been some discussion about the difference in quality of the voice. You can tell when that microphone is picking up this one. They said these are state-of-the-art, the best you can buy. They just thought maybe the circuit board can't deliver what these are capable of. So they suggested keeping these and trying it out and seeing if, you know, and if it really doesn't work, then replacing them. But that was just their way of adding on extra cost savings for us. So where
I'm going to really struggle is, while it's tempting to think about going down the road of putting on a meeting with some production value in it, remembering that it takes manpower to put together that production kind of quality thing, and I don't think we're there yet.
I agree.
So, Marty, thoughts?
I like the idea that we would be proposing technology would be scalable as to add components as the desire or situation permitted. I guess I'm always torn by the metric that we use as we get counts on who watches our meetings in regards to who consumes our work product. And if to say on an
average, different meetings get different counts.
There you go. And it's modest at best for the most part. But I think that we should probably lean in the direction of at some point adding that ability. I don't disagree. I'd like to see on a numbers basis, but I will probably not want to go anywhere past what we're now proposing just because. We're trying to address what we know clearly is failing.
Right.
And at that point, let us call that a good day and then talk about a future year.
And I'm in agreement with you guys. As much as I would like for everyone to watch our meetings, I do recognize that, and there's only so much dollars that we should put together toward engaging the public more. That is very hard for me to say, as you both know, okay? But so I like this option about asking them to do some add-ons in the RFP. So, but
on a costing basis,
being very cruel.
What this technology right. would cost us to bring on board.
Okay, so you got consensus, Barb. Is that enough information for you?
Yes, it is. I guess I'm getting the idea that we probably need to start with a base system that's fully expandable, and if we want to add these options, this is what it would cost.
Perfect. Yeah, so get us that information. Next item is discussion consideration of Story County Website Standards Guide and Policy.
Me?
Yes.
So the website committee got together and looked at some documents that Civic Plus had for us, and then we also looked at a document Edina, Minnesota shared with us, and then kind of combined those and came up with some ideas and presented this document. This is our draft. It's by no means the final, but we wanted to present it to the board to see what you like, what you dislike, if you want to add anything, or what you think in general.
I was very impressed with the document that was put together. I went through it and I went, wow, this really addresses the core that we need to keep, as it was pointed out, a brand and to be unified, and yet still gives each department control over their own pages. I found it very helpful. I thought, geez, if I knew enough about the system, I could go in and do some things with it. So I think you guys did a wonderful job on this. It exceeded even what I anticipated would be brought forward. So
I was really pleased in the meeting when we got together and went over this. The notes that people brought to the meeting, the input, they owned it, and that really just made me feel a little good about it.
Well, your group, your website group's done a phenomenal job all the way through this thing. Not an easy task. All right, so Loris, Marty, you got anything to add on that?
Nothing.
I really thought we were going to spend some time on this. I'm really happy to hear that you you like what you saw here. I would suggest that we go ahead and adopt this with 7-day review and get it out to everybody and let every department head, recognizing that this is where we're headed, make comments on it.
Nothing. I'd just like the public to know that this is a product that was done internally with cross-checks from other organizations, and I think it reflects the quality and talent and abilities of the people that work at Story County. And I think it's clearly a success, as you both have said. And I have watched this go from what it was to what is, knowing that we give ourselves the ability to improve it along the way. And I think that somebody needs to make a motion to that end.
I'll just say, and then Loris will get to your motion. I'll just say, so when I sat down in this chair for the first time, we were still using something beneath a standard GoDaddy website. I mean, it was, Shelly, you remember those days, don't you? Yeah, where we didn't have anything. And so now we're getting to the second iteration of that. Loris, now go.
I would move that we adopt the Story County website standard
site
as presented with 7-day review.
I would gladly second that.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes with 7-day review. Who's going to handle getting it out to everybody?
I can send it out.
That'll come from you. All right.
Thank you.
Get that in everybody's hands so they have time to comment.
Leanne, I'm sure you probably worked on this too behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good to meet you. We'll get all that, together. All right. So next, something new. Departmental reports, information technology.
Me again. So the first item on my agenda, standards, we just went over that. So chalk that one off. I also wanted just to point out training. So we had the Civic Plus training on the website, and then Animal Control approached us a week or two ago and said, hey, can we have training? So Leanne and Paula and I trained the Animal Control group, and for us it was a good chance to review what we'd been taught in training. So Deb and Anna went back to the office and they started working on their page. They were very excited, really into it, and knew that the animal control page needed a little bit of update. So that was kind of a good experience for all of us. The only really issue I think we had with the whole website, looking at it in hindsight, there were some issues on the Civic Plus side with the permissions. We had trouble when we add a permission to a group, it would erase the individuals. But they fixed that for us. And then the only other issue I saw was the confusion over the calendar and how that would work. And it was a module, so it was something that was easily changed. And we're still, we made some updates. It's a living document, I guess, in my opinion. So we'll change it to meet our needs in the future. I also wanted to talk about some networking updates. So that Windstream circuit that we've been talking about now for 2 years, we did get that canceled. I canceled it 30 days before the cancellation deadline, and I did it according to procedure, talked to our representative to make sure I was going to go about it correctly, and he just sent me an email this morning saying it was canceled, and this has been a 90-day process. So not sure what happened there. He did say he was ill, but somebody dropped the ball. So where I stand right now is I'm not going to pay for that 90 days past the date I asked. Yep. I said, effective on this day, we want to cancel that circuit. They all knew it was coming. And he said, well, billing will get you the final bill together. I'm not going to pay anything past, April
10th. And just copy Ethan in on those conversations.
Will do.
Yeah.
And then when we did the core switch upgrade earlier this year, it was all done. We thought we were fine. The project manager on that project left the company. So then we started getting questions from the city of Ames, why can't we get into Tyler? It's sporadic. Once in a while we can, once in a while we can't. So we asked the vendor to look at the project again. They considered it close, but we were still having issues, and this is the only thing that's changed. So they did find that there was a missing IP address and a route. So we got that fixed, and City of Ames is fine.
Good.
So I guess it's a learning experience. If everything goes smoothly, you don't learn anything. We've done a lot of hardware replacements this year. The NetApp, which you guys approved, I really appreciate that. We now have a Cadillac model NetApp for a Ford Fiesta price, which, yay. I always look for bargains. So the NetApp and the Barracuda are going to be the two hardware items we're going to install yet this year. And if you saw on the consent agenda, we had some switches in there. So we found out that the new equipment is 10 gig speed. Now our current switches say they're 10 gig, but they don't handle it real well. And they're 8 years old. So those are being replaced to accommodate this nice, fast Cadillac. And then another thing that we're really going to push and struggle with is our Windows 7 retirement. Microsoft is shutting off support in January of next year. So, and they just announced this a few months ago. So we've got, I think it figured we had 120 PCs that we had to replace. So we're down to 60 now, but Tim has just been working like crazy to get those replaced. And we'll still be going into next year replacing those, but we have to have everything out of the door by January of 2019. I hate how Microsoft does that to us. And they promised this is the last time that from now on, the Windows 10 platform will be the base, and then they'll just upgrade it in place. So we'll see.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of activity in the multi-agency, so I wanted to give you a little bit of an update on that. The 28E refresh and the security agreement that I've been asked to help work on, kind of put that on the back burner because of the huge hardware replacement and software upgrade. This system hasn't been touched for 7 years, so it was much needed. It needed to go to the top of the calendar. We had some issues with the hardware replacement, and it was just a case of no good documentation from the previous installation. We had to relearn a few things, but it's all now documented and in place. The software update was a little more challenging because PageGate wasn't updated, and there was some confusion as to is that included as part of the software or is it a separate fee? And what it boiled down to was the software vendor would support PageGate, which was a separate software, but you had to pay for it separately. And we just thought when we were paying the software vendor that we paid for PageGate too, and that's just the paging. So we were having trouble with paging, and that's not a good thing. So everything is up to date and installed and good now, and we paid all our bills, so we're good to go. And then we just... we're struggling with the outer agencies. We've brought three on, and I think there's a question as they're not quite understanding the actual costs of bringing them into our system, having them get all the software updates, being able to access what's going on. So we pulled together a document a couple years ago. I think it got lost because I don't think it was ever presented. So that needs to come out after we get done with dispatch consoles, that will once again be a priority.
So, Barb, in this particular situation, is it just educating the outside, we say outside, but really they're part of Story County, right, but educating these other agencies, departments, about what needs to be done and the additional costs, or is it also a budgeting issue that they're not submitting the correct amounts to us for January consideration?
I think it's a combination of all that. This is new to them. A lot of them are volunteers and don't really have a lot of computer background, education savvy. And then there's the question of when they have a question, who do they call for support? And who trains them? Who pays for their internet connection? A lot of them didn't have an internet connection before. So it's just...
Okay.
Things are starting to build up, and they're like, whoa, wait a minute, why is it this expensive? So detailing that information, sometimes if you're just detailing it in a meeting or to a group, it doesn't get passed
right,
on.
But draw the line, that's not, yeah. We're not talking about Story County government.
Oh, okay, no, yeah, I you're talking about Story County government. Thank you, that was a
this would be like Story City, Huxley.
Thank you.
That want to be, to have access to our software.
Thank you.
The sheriff's office. And I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that. Sometimes when you talk about something so much, you just assume everybody knows.
Dispatch consoles, are we getting where we need to be?
You know, there's a real struggle there, especially with the vendor. They did. So while they were doing the remodel, Story County sent dispatch to ISU and City of Ames so that we could completely clear the room out. Once they got two consoles in, so at least they could work there temporarily over the Labor Day weekend, they found out that they were not ADA compliant, so they weren't handicap accessible.
And it was part of the bid. It was part of what they put out as their spec sheet, and the vendor did not appear to provide what they said they were going to provide.
The vendor has been real hard to pin down, very material, if you will. It'll be fine. You know, we got it, and then they don't. So we have a meeting tomorrow. I don't know what kind of meeting it will be, but to get some things resolved. Mm-hmm. And we want, the sheriff especially wants Eaton to sign a contract that if the ADA or anybody comes in and says these are not handicap compliant, that they will, at their own expense, tear down the wall and make it that way. Because there's not enough room for the desks that they gave us. In a pinch, we can remove one of the dividers on one of the desks to be able to get a wheelchair in there, but that's not where you want to be when you're spending this kind of money.
Right.
So I know Dina has worked really hard on that, and she's, I know, had a lot of hair pulling, but we're all trying to support her and get through this.
I'm going to ask a question that I think you guys have already made a decision to go forward with what we have, but was there any discussion about backing up and saying, let's go find another vendor?
You know, that was tossed around, but with the time constraints and the lead time for ordering materials and the contract already signed, we kind of had to stick with what we had.
Okay, thank you.
We're doing some, under my other odds and ends, we're doing some software updates. We're going to replace our Kaspersky antivirus with something different. There has been no discussion that this is a Russian software and that our data is all going to Russia. Well, let me explain to you what exactly happened there. So many times, if you've worked on your computer and with Microsoft, if something happens and you get this message, you've encountered an error, do you want to send this information to Microsoft for their education, you know, so they can figure it out kind of thing? That's all that somebody received when they had Kaspersky installed. The software vendor wants to know if you're having issues. They're not necessarily getting all the data off your computer, but that's how the rumor started, that, oh, they're getting data and they're sending it to Russia. That's not true. However, a couple of the elected offices have asked us, they're getting comments from the public, so can we please replace this? So it's up for renewal in June, and we've got a couple other software we're looking at, a little more expensive, but they will do the same job. So we're working to do that, scrambling to get end of the fiscal year stuff done. Just want to talk a little bit, too, about security cameras. The jail approached us with the renewals that they've gotten. And I looked them over. I talked with Micah and John and made some recommendations. And I know Micah said he was going to visit with you guys about it.
Mm-hmm. Individually.
Yes.
That's all right. That's not your responsibility. That's ours.
So what IT has volunteered to do is handle the hardware side of it, and I recommended he at least still renew the contract for the software until we find a software that we think will do the job. The problem we ran into is when, and I know I was on call one night, and the jail called, and they were having trouble with their cameras. So I tried to remote in and found out we do not have access to the servers. We don't have access to anything. I said, I'm sorry, I can't get in. Can this wait till morning? No, we need it tonight. I said, well, since I don't have access, you have to call CEC. They called CEC, and they didn't get back to them until the next morning. So why is it okay for the vendor to wait till the next morning, whereas if I had access to that server, all it needed was a reboot. Could have rebooted it, got all the cameras refreshed, and they would have been good to go. And that's just part of an ongoing issue with the vendor. So we might as well take over the servers and the switches and everything else associated with it. We do it with our own stuff. So, and I think it will save the jail about $70,000 in hardware costs, not in software costs.
Sure.
So just something else, the email accounts. We're creating 39 new email accounts for facilities, secondary roads, animal control, so that they can get Story County-related items and also be able to get updates that don't have to be printed and put in their paychecks every week. So, and I know I talked to Joby yesterday, and he said he's going to make his staff check their email once a week at least. But we'll see how that goes. But I am going to go there. Kyle met with the secondary roads group, and I'm going to go to HSC, I believe, on Thursday and talk to the facilities group and just go over, you know, here's the password policy, here's what you need to do with your email, just a lot of the, mostly what we do with new employees when they come in, because basically they are a new employee to the system. So That should be interesting. And then just wanted to give you a little bit of an update on the generator replacement on Saturday. That is our backup database system there. So Joel scripted all the devices to shut down before the generator switchover. Unfortunately, we didn't unplug the UPS, so when they shut down, they just automatically went over to UPS instead of going cold, so we had to make a physical drive in and shut them down physically. The generator was switched over, and we brought them back up. Everything was fine. So I guess if stuff like that doesn't happen, you don't learn.
Good.
That's all I have.
Question for Barb.
For me?
Barb, thanks.
You are welcome. Have
Absolutely.
A good rest of your day.
Yep. Next is Environmental Health, Margaret James.
Good morning,
Phil. Good morning. Hi there. Always a good thing to say.
Chair's warm. I'm going to sit over there. Give me a second here. I get this up and running. Please.
At the point of issuing at least RFPs on this system, all of this. Okay. We're getting closer.
The county got its dollars worth of technology we will be replacing.
Thank you. Okay. Last time I reported to you was in February, so some of my pictures have snow. So my main goal today is to just remind you that we are still in the basement working hard. Marty comes down often and talks to us and checks on us, but
and I enjoy doing it because I always learn something.
He's always entertaining when he comes down. So good morning. Start off with wells. You're looking down a well pit with down a pitless adapter on it. Well permits, only four so far this calendar year, all water. Eight plugings, then we filled one cistern, zero rehab. Water sample 62, time of transfer is 14. We've still got about 5,000 left in our grant to counties budget, so we're winding down. The state likes us or insists that we be really careful to only fund projects that are done in this fiscal year, so we have to kind of dance around that deadline on those. Story County is involved in a state hygienic lab study of wells. We did the first round of testing, just a short sampling, six samples, and we tested for total coliform bacteria, E. coli, nitrate, nitrite, arsenic, and neonicotinoids. The neonicotinoids are for, it's a pesticide created in the 80s, and they're seeing if it's affecting the bee population, if that's part of their decline. So the first round that we did in the winter, no detects on anything of those things I mentioned except for arsenic. Three of them show trace amounts, but not too far below action levels, according to EPA. And then and then 17 additional samples submitted just this May, and we're going to finish out in July for them. This is covered by grants, no extra dollars from Story County. For septics, 34 permits were issued, 7 in the process, 6 repair permits, and 20 inspections.
Now, these numbers for this calendar year are lower than the same time period last year, and I think it's because the Cameron Estates, they just flooded us, and those are still actually open files. I just haven't, they just haven't come in with their building plans yet, so they're just kind of sitting in limbo right now. I think that's what affected the numbers mostly. Speaking of septics, doggone, Story County stole Nick Carriage, who put quite a few septic systems in the Nevada area, and so we wish him luck. He does both the field tiles and the septic, and hopefully it will continue to work in the county a little bit. There will be a big void in our industry with him leaving. So Kathy Basilinski covers the tattoo inspection program. Four initial inspections, zero remaining, not huge problem with them. Same with the tanning facilities, 11 inspections, 9 remaining.
Let me ask about the tattoos. Four initial, so there are four new?
No, I'm sorry. So every year, the complete inspection of the facility, follow-ups would be four complaints or problems that we found.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Pools and spas, Matt covers these. So recently, Matt and Kathy went and got their CPO certification, certified pool operator certification, and mine expires, and I'll be going in June, 2-day and sit for a long test. No fun. But it lasts for 5 years. Okay. Okay, so 47 pool spa establishments in all. 24 of the indoors have been inspected. 10 outdoor have been inspected and 13 remaining. Matt hits the ground running right after Memorial Day when the pools open, the outdoor pools open, and then he's got a bunch to do on those. Those are really important because that's where you get the crowds of people and the crypto and that kind of stuff. So very important program that we do. Manure management plans, DNR, this year allow people to submit online manure management updates, their annual updates that they're required to do. Some people are old school and don't want to do it this way. A lot of them are doing it this way. The whole problem is that we used to track on GIS the land application sites. We can no longer do that because you can check a box that says I've added acres to my manure management plan, but they don't have to submit a map online. So we can't tell people that we have information when we don't have the full set, so we are going to discontinue mapping them as of this date because it would be false information.
Do you know anything about the DNR's philosophy in not requiring the online updates to be the same as what the paper ones were?
It's acceptable the way it is. The way is their philosophy that this is the way it's going to be. And that if we have problems, we can have them contact DNR. It's a whole. I don't know if they realize the ramifications when they allow this. I think you should be able to do a manure management plan update online unless there's acres added. You know, changing rotation of crops, I have no problem with that. You know, check out the maps and send it in. But if you had a map update, I think you should be required to send it in manual. But I'm not queen, so. So anyway, so this is really, you know, a big ripple. So we're not doing that anymore, and if any calls come in for manure complaints, bam, they go to DNR.
Thank you.
Okay, yep, I didn't know. That being said, I added this slide just this morning because Marty came down last week and said there were problems on 170th that a complaint was received. I did not find anything on 170th west of S14. So I dropped down a road, and this is where I assume Towser is stockpiling dry bedded manure. So I don't know if this, Marty, was what the complaint was.
Reached out to me, lived on 170th,
and that's what started the conversation. And I knew, and I talked to Bill subsequently, and just like, I guess the rule is that he has to be, what, 1,250 feet from an occupied line for this. And
this was on 180th, so I don't know if this...
No, it's him, but the person I talked to that started the conversation for me to talk to you was 170th. So where this is at is just the physical locality. Where the 170th is just the fact that that's the residence for where he lived.
Okay.
So really it turns into the fact that this is a legal holding area for...
And it's something that Gallagher and others do every year.
That's right.
Just he's using his multiple farms and... This for, I guess I didn't tease out the deal with Bill as to why he's doing it here, but I think it probably works into the fact that it would probably be more of a pre-positioned location for future applications.
Well, I don't think this is a whole lot different from where Gallagher's done in the past. I picture it, he kind of goes to this area, different points of the field.
West, a little bit north.
It's an industry standard and a farmer specific, and I should probably share with the, I don't know why the DNR would take away the mapping component. I guess they did. I don't know if they had to choose. If I were king, you were queen, I'd probably say, just put the mapping component in. But we're not.
We don't hang around with royalty.
We're not royalty. We're never likely to be. But, this doesn't rise to the level that it's a problem. It is just like it was one of those brought to my attention for the fact that as the traffic generates, there it's just like, okay, what's new? What's happening? And that's about the long and the short of it.
So this is the only thing I could find manure-related. Everything was fine. And this is dry bedding. It is not. There's not liquid involved with this. I'm sure there's a bit of runoff when there's a rain event. So it looks good. But
it I sense it. We get concerned when you can see it from the road. Yeah. When you can see the pile from the road, we get concerned.
Yeah. That's scary seeing.
It's animal agriculture. It's been practiced 3 years, and actually this is much better than it used to be.
Yeah. So, okay, septic pumper inspection. So I still do the two in Marshall County. They do not do land applications, so I just review their records and look at their trucks for a few things. And then in Surrey County, we do Drain Tech and Earl Septic, and they do both land apply. Income from the contract for those four inspections for the year is $6,000. My slides are out of order. And this was back in the summertime. This was really amazing to me. This was a diesel spill that happened in Boone County, on the County Line Road, and went under the road and affected the property owner in Story County. She had horses in that. So we resolved this immediate issue, but I see, bigger issues that they need to clean that place up. And that's a DNR Boone thing, and I don't see a lot of activity happening with that.
Even if you were Queen of Story County, you wouldn't get to handle that one. Because that's Boone County.
Right.
That's right.
So just a little disappointing how lax the whole procedure was, to be perfectly honest.
Have you had any discussions with the environmental department, environmental health over in Boone County about this?
Yes, Jeremy Starr, I talked to him, and I talked to the other guy, forget his name, and they say it's a DNR thing. So, okay.
Thanks for having the discussion.
And then I was involved in Grant 5 drainage district improvements. The gist of that is I pointed out those sites that probably did not have septic systems. And I think it was an eye-opener for some folks came up and talked about it being grandfathered. Nobody's grandfathered. If you're discovered having discharge into the drainage ditch or drainage area, you have to replace your system.
Just want to make sure you said not having septic systems. You mean septic system inspections?
Well, there's nothing on file.
There's nothing on file.
Every house that I've ever seen has a tank, but a lot of them don't have anything after that. So it just goes right. Goes right to our watershed. So.
Right, and let's just be really clear. You're not saying anything about those dots except you don't have any inspections on file.
That's correct.
But you're not going beyond that?
No. Although I did make the correlation for 100% of the ones down by Hickory Grove, if they didn't have anything on file, 100% didn't have anything in the ground. Just saying.
So what would you recommend as far as we might want to do about this? Is it, you know, advocacy, contacting people individually?
Well, I could do that. I've been told in the past by legal that we can't single people out.
Right.
You know, it has to be an equal treatment. Working with the folks that are going to be actually hands-on, they need to know what to look for and to contact us if they see problems. Pipes going into a drainage ditch, for example, report that to us and we will follow up on it. We would probably put some dye in and trace it. You know, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea for the whole district next time a mailing goes out to put an informational flyer in that. I don't know if there are a lot of mailings, that kind of thing. The education.
But the yellow dots represent assistance on file with us.
Correct. Yes.
So that would probably represent, maybe it's not 100%, but systems that are functioning, at least they've been updated since the original. The homes were built, because a lot of these homes are turn of the century, last century.
Yeah. So in 72 is when permitting started. So it could be as old as that or as young as this year.
But at the time of transfer, these systems are brought up to code.
Correct.
So they kind of sunset themselves. If the house is changes hands, the system is brought up to. Or if the house is dropped, it just stops being anyway.
But only if they totally fail do they get replaced.
Okay.
Yeah, or upgraded.
Okay, a couple questions, follow up. If they transfer within a family,
That's correct. They're
right.
They're
okay. And then the legal saying you have to treat everyone the same, is it everyone the same in a drainage district, or would we have to notify everyone in the county that we don't show they have a permit on file?
I think the latter. I think you're probably right. And I don't know. I guess I should go to the Board of Health with that question. Is that being too aggressive for that?
Do we have the means? If you're seeking knowledge, there's no problem there. But, I mean, just so what are you going to do? What's your follow-up? Where's your endpoint?
I understand, and I haven't gotten there. I'm asking a preliminary question.
The process,
right.
But then again, you have people that you send that piece of literature to. What are they to make of
it? Yeah, they're going to say, so what? Or
what are you
right.
talking about here? What,
right.
what expense am I going to have to stand for your...
And I'm thinking about the fact that the Hickory Grove ones all needed some type of either inspection or remediation, correct?
Of the ones that didn't have anything.
Of the ones that didn't have anything. So that's, I guess,
right,
where
I'm
thinking.
The county was putting half the bill for that.
Yeah.
Right. No, I understand that.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm trying not to get too far ahead of the thought process.
Yeah.
At that point, I've got the information I need to just think.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Good question. Okay, so this was supposed to be a couple before, so I goofed. So anyway, this is the Drain Tech pumper inspection. So they land apply on their own land that they own, and doggone, this looks really disgusting. And I think, so the bottom
people
right...
People don't realize how close they drive past this as they go between the data and
the... Yeah, it's right across from...
Country landscapes,
yeah. So the bottom right are the dog bags, because they have the contract to pump the park. So there's those. These other ones, they have been pumping, as they all do, they pump out the grease traps for the restaurants, and it's being land applied. I think it's sealing their soil up, and this is what we're seeing, because there's no reason why. It was bone dry when I was out there, 2 days running, it looked like this. So they're going to have to change how they do business on the grease, I believe. Ames did drop their price down on the tipping fee, so hopefully they will start doing that, bringing it to the Ames treatment plant as opposed to land application. It's a gray area. DNR kind of says they allow it, kind of say they don't. So.
Okay. Do we have any independent control over the conditions? About when they can land?
They're meeting all the setbacks. They're meeting the slope. They're meeting the soil. Okay. You know, so it's just a matter of, it's a puzzle why this is
ponding, and I think it looks sweet. So I'm going to work with them, have them plow it up some, and put a line for a while there. It's far enough back, I don't think dogs or flies or things, you know, I don't think it's impacting the public at this point.
All right, thank you.
And then Earl Septic, he mostly does it strip along the turbines. He has an agreement with one of the farmers there. His application site looks fine. There's another one closer to Nevada here, the top right. His major problem is that he's not keeping records of who he's pumping in that. So I'll have to figure out how to get him up to speed on that. Special projects that we've done since February, codification, we're done with that. Squaw Valley South, still working with that. They've got about 4 years now to replace their plant or come up with some other scheme to do things. It's a huge undertaking for them. A lot of hard feelings in the association there, you know, because they were talking a lot of money. So, you know, working with them, just kind of being their answering source, it's a little frustrating. You know, I've gone to meetings and spoken to groups couple times, but I still get individual calls, and you know, they add up in time. So, you know, it's been a large work burden. At Keith and Melissa's shop, I reviewed the SF-11 and made comments. Let's see, it's time to take a closer look at Thompson Salvage and McCallsburg again. And then Kathy sent out notices for people who are behind on their maintenance contracts for the dischargers. And then I'm not going to go through these, but planning and development get a lot of conceptual review requests in, and they go across all the applications that they get, go across our desks as well. So we do have input on all these things that come through, and planning is great to work with. You know, we bounce ideas back and forth and share our information. Works out great. Training meetings, I'm not going to go through all these either. We've been taking advantage of the HR classes that are provided. Excellent, excellent, excellent. You know, just really fun. Although sometimes that's what I have to miss because it's just a busy time, you know. And with that, I say thank you.
Questions for Margaret. Thanks, Margaret. No,
okay.
Pretty thorough. Yep. Appreciate what your department does. They are committed, and it shows, and I think we get results that are defendable.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, Loris.
I think we talked about the biggest thing from last week, and that was the HRTA board meeting. Just that's part of it. There will be layoffs. Obviously, with that much of a cut in the budget, the executive committee is working with the staff, and I wanted to kind of just emphasize that the board is taking a more active role in oversight as these transitions occur. Obviously, there's one supervisor from each of the counties in the HRTA area, and we all want to make sure that services are impacted as little as possible and taking a look at some of the administrative costs there going forward, et cetera. And so I will be watching that closely. They're issuing an RFP to determine if we can break down on our, really cut down on our repair and maintenance costs by going all at one location. And I think I'll sit on that RFP review committee with them. If it's okay with you guys, it'll take a couple hours, but this is important, I think, for our citizens. And so then I have just begun going out, making appointments, and I'm going to be talking housing all summer long. I'll try to keep all of them as I schedule either little presentations to various groups on my calendar so you guys can track them. You know, I'm not always 100% on that calendar, but I'm going to try and do that. Yeah, so, and that's, I think, the big thing. Thanks.
Okay, you do a great job. Sorry, I retract my statement. I'm going to a lot of initials on
yeah,
that.
I will. Yeah, I guess like, who? Where?
Okay. Where is Rick?
That's right. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Marty, easy. I will just take a leg off of the conversation to the declaration of the watershed
I think that is a wonderful thing that we've done. In the short time I've been on the board, that is something we've done. I commend the people we've partnered with. Our conservation department is second to none. I was in a conversation with a private landowner at the end of the week that stepped into the beginning of the week in regards to doing demonstrator sites on water improvement qualities. Name's Bill Kauser. I think it's familiar to everybody. That he's looking to donate part of a farm of his to demonstrator sites that would speak to his peer group, which is farmers, mm-hmm. as to what they can do in their own fields and give them a real hands-on. Because as the Farm Progress Show rotates through this area every 3 years, he would like to, and he's doing this in conjunction with Monsanto, so it's not just a small board thing. And it's a project that's starting, and he has multiple sites. He has a creek exposure on the west Indian Creek. I say creek and creek in the same word, in a sentence, that's a go figure. But I think that there's a great good that can come out of this, because sometimes you just need one to lead. And he's a leader, and he's demonstrated that capacity, and he wants to do this. And he articulates this better than I ever could. He just says, we are stewards of the land, and we give it back to somebody else when our time is done with it. And if we can improve it in the time that we have it, then we set the table for real progress going forward. It's wonderful to hear, because that's private dollars looking for an outcome, and we do that here with the public dollars. And I think that that's what we're trying to move towards, that we value these things. We work to improve these things, and this is a success story as I have had it related to me.
Yeah, Bill talks a lot, and you're right. He is pretty powerful among his peer group, kind of the larger larger farmers, especially those that do something with livestock. But he talks a lot about our ultimate goal is to get to where we are pulling the energy from the sun out, and we're leaving everything else on the ground where it was before. Right, and so you think about, we looked at the manure piles that Margaret had up there. I mean, the ultimate goal for him, and really for any farmer, is to grow the crop, feed the cattle or the swine or the chickens, pull that protein out of there, but basically leave everything on the ground except for what came from the sun. And if we could ever get there, if we could ever get to the point that it's not flowing downstream, it's good for everybody. I talk all the time. We've got something here in Iowa called the nutrient reduction strategy, and I just think it's misnomer. I think what we mean is the nutrient retention strategy. We want the nutrients to stay right there on the soil. We just don't want them moving around a whole lot, and Bill's a great leader of that. Anything else for us? If not, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very good.